Hey, Bruno, welcome back.
Hey, Adam, how are you doing, man? So good to be here with you. I was just saying to you that I love your podcast because it's always, you know, entertainment and good conversations, good technology. So it's always an honor to be here with you. Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Oh, thank you. By the way, you mentioned the podcast. What I did the other day, 2 days ago, I took a look at the Apple podcast, and what I found, it's actually well rated. I think it was like 4.5 stars. So thank you to the audience for, you know, rating my podcast. And I really appreciate it. So I have to, you know, look it up earlier. But thank you for the really great reviews. And after the talk, Bruno, I think is even getting better.
Yes, you know, everyone that's listening right now, you should go there and give a 5-star, right? So how come it's 4.5, right? So
this is a rounding error, you know? They didn't use big numbers. I think it's fiddle with double or something like this, you know?
Yes, that's right. So so go there, you know, give Adam your 5-star, right? Because his podcast is awesome.
Perfect. And my sponsors, which are not existing, love it.
Yes, that's even better.
We can have sponsor it, you know. Bruno, what's really interests me, you mentioned last year that the Christmas trees are a little bit right. Pitty in Brazil. And what you're doing, you're buying them, and then you're planting them, and you have the entire wall full of Christmas trees.
Well, so we buy fruit trees.
Yeah.
We make them as Christmas trees, right? So we bring mm-hmm. them inside the house, and we decorate them as Christmas trees, and then we plant outside, right? So yeah, we have a bunch of them. And this time we already have, we can't decorate the Christmas trees too early because the trees suffer, right? If they are inside too much and all of that, right? So we have 3 small trees right outside of my window, just mm-hmm. waiting for maybe tomorrow. I'm just going to bring them inside and decorate them for Christmas, right? So yeah, so we already have 3 fruit trees ready to go.
What fruit is it?
So I'm not sure if I know how to say their names in English.
Yeah, right? Brazil is just fine.
Okay, so yes, one of them is jabuticabeira.
Jabuticabeira.
Yes, it gives a tiny little berry fruits, right?
So okay.
The fruits they come out in the trunk of the tree, right? Mm-hmm. It's pretty nice.
Okay,
and then another one is called lichia.
Lichia.
Lichia is a very nice fruit. It has a big seed inside, and it's lots of white meat, right? And mm-hmm. then it's red skin, right? So it's mm-hmm. like lichia. And then the other one is cajá, right? So cajá is a fruit that my wife likes. And
cajá.
Yes, it's actually the smaller ones of the trees, because, you know, we have to buy trees that are large enough, right, to be a Christmas tree, but small enough, right, that we can actually carry, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why I buy 2 or 3 trees and I merge them together and make like a larger Christmas tree.
That's great. What I forgot the story, actually, in Brazil, are people buying fruit trees or are they buying the proper, you know, Christmas trees and they are dying then?
No, I think most people use fake trees, right?
You
know, plastic or most mm-hmm. fake trees, right? But then there are some people that buy Christmas tree, but the Christmas tree that you buy, when you buy a pine tree, the pine mm-hmm. tree, they need to cut the root
or
mm-hmm. too much, right? So if you try to plant them, they usually don't survive, right? So we tried that a couple of times, and then we decided to move to fruit trees.
This is what I remember, because what I remembered, I thought that you are planting the pine trees, but fruit trees are even nicer. So you have the entire, you know, fruit.
We tried to plant some pine trees. I even have one pine tree. Most of them died. I even have one that I call a zombie pine tree that's way back in my yard. Because it never died and it never survived, right? So mm-hmm. it's all brown. You know, it has been there for a couple of years now. It's actually more than a couple of years, several years now, because it's been a few years that we do this already. So it's still there. It's all brown and it has some tiny little green leaves in some branches, right? So it kind of become a zombie tree. And so you know, this it's a little sad, right, that we try to plant a tree and doesn't grow. So
yeah, should call it monolith, you know, like, you know, the monolith architecture. They never die, you know, and but they never really popular. So it's like a something in between.
Yeah, so I have a monolith three then.
Yeah, perfect. So it interests me because you have a lots of companies as well. So what did you do with Java last year? Last year we talked, I think, was November. So you had, you know, 12 months time. Do you still do something with Java, or are you just, you know, a manager managing people? And
no, actually, the thing that I'm doing a lot, and I'm doing a lot of things with Java developers, right? You know, this, having working, let me just restart this again. So start working with developers, right, has been such a big change in my life. I devote all my time today to really help developers, you know, grow their careers and understand where they're going and what kind of things what challenge they have, right? I still do things with Java, but mostly, you know, personal projects and stuff for me and, you know, just learning things. But I have not been working with customers lately. I still support people when they call me and I help out in projects here and there. But really, I don't think there's anything more important than helping people be happy and you know, strive in their careers and improve their lives or their families. So this has been, this last few years has been such an amazing for me because I've been focused on that. And, you know, all the stories of developers having success and all the stories of, you know, people growing and really, really getting their families happy. The other day I was in an event in a city called Goiânia here in Brazil. And then, you know, when the pandemic allowed us to travel again, right? So I was there in this event and I had two developers there. I went out for dinner with two developers and one of them lived in Goiânia. So his wife came along. And so I had to answer a phone call. So I left the table for a few minutes and come back. The three of them were talking about how much their lives improved and, you know, how much the, you know, working on better projects and the wife was saying, you know, it's amazing how much better we have. You know, we're buying new cars, we're buying new houses and life is much better and our families are happier. And they're saying that, you know, because they start doing the things that I tell them to do, right? And I think that there's no software I ever wrote in my life that gives me as much satisfaction as this, right? That having people really change their lives because they're doing the right thing. So, so that's what I'm doing right now, man. It's all kind of Java related because all developers, most of them work with Java, but it's more career than software.
Okay, so. First, a smaller question. What you did then with Java for you? You said, you know, you use Java for smaller projects. So what was it? Hello World doesn't count, you know.
Hello World. No. So basically, I do, you know, I have my own company, right? And so, mm-hmm. You know, there's all kinds of things that you have to do when you have your company. So I'm very strong in automation, right? I love to automate things. So... So I basically what I do is that I build little tools that help me to automate things, right? So, mm-hmm. Scrape things from here, save things over there, you know, download things for this place and use this API to upload somewhere else, right? So that's the kind of things that I do. You know, a lot of little I like a lot clients, right? You know, CLIs, right? Mm-hmm. And command line tools, Internet. Right? So, mm-hmm. So basically, you know, so tools to like kind of one interesting one that's the results are even public, right? So I'm very bad at remember names of people, right? Mm-hmm. So
what's my name?
you're Adam, right? But it's right here.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay.
But. So one thing that I did getting ready for Java 1, right? So I did this little tool that downloads all the Java champions and get information from them, from their Twitter accounts and all that, and their pictures and all that, and then put in Anki, right? There's a tool to help you remember people, right? So So this kind of not remember people. Anki is a tool to that helps you remember things, right? In general, right? So okay. I did that to help me, kind of connect the names to the people, right? I mean, most of the Java champions are my friends, and I know them, and it's not a problem. But there's a lot of others that I don't know them very well, and so I did that to try to help me remember people. So you know, this kind of little tools like this, right? Tools that allow me to just run command line, and instead of being clicking a lot of things, just kind of automate some of the things that I have to do.
Yeah, but this is actually also what I do a lot. I've read lots of small tools which help me, you know. For instance, I do EHX workshops, and sometimes the attendees, you know, get emails. So I wrote a little Java tool which, you know, sends emails and stuff like that. So it's fun, and you also learn a lot because such tools are not that trivial. You know, what's trivial, most enterprise project like create, read, update, delete is always the same. But if you write little tools, you actually learn the most, right?
Yeah, it's very nice. It's you know, I love that because really, you know, first of all, they sound like one-off things, right? They're just kind of small thing that you're going to do. But actually, you know, the thing that I love about automation is that, you know, it shaves so much of your time, right, off, right? So, you know, you don't realize how many things you have to do to get some things done. And so when you have a little tool that automates that, it really helps you. So that's for me was always the biggest thing for software development was always automating things and making things run faster and smoother and less manual errors. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I do today.
Mm-hmm. And using Java 17 or Java 19, which Java?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm always trying to keep up with Java, right? And so I'm trying to use whatever is the latest thing. But right now I'm on 17, right? Most of the things that I installed is on 17.
But it's really nice, especially for automation. If you have to do something with JSON, for instance, you know, the multi-line string is just great. And you can have, you know, multi-line string with position parameters, which is very good if you would like to access, you know, external APIs. Then we have the Java HTTP client. And there we go. I mean, with HTTP client, just, you know, the JSON, the string, maybe executor service, which is fully optional. But, I mean, it's already very lean and efficient. By the way, I'm recording from time to time on YouTube Shorts, and I'm using Java 17 syntax, you know, var. And people ask, you know, is it Java still? So what's really surprising, seems like there are Java developers out there who just, you know, using Java 8 maybe, because the syntax is Java 11 or Java 17. I mean, Java 11 is Java 17, but Java 11 looks exactly the same. And people are still, you know, surprised how lean and nice Java actually is today.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this is, actually, we're in the JCP just this past week, right? And Brian Guest was talking about data-oriented programming, right? So new features coming along to
records, Java records for automation, really great because you know you can scrape data and put it in stream and do something with it immediately. So
cool. So that's all good, right? So I mean, the more the language helps out, right? The easier it is for us to do things, and that's great.
Very good. So how are your companies doing? So since last year, so did the project changed? Or is it all the same? It's just you know, new clients, or what's the state of the company?
So we had a lot of changes this year, right? So last year I had, you know, I had some difficulties. You know, I had some severe health issues.
Okay.
In my life here, right? So my wife and me, and so when I got to the end of the year, I realized that I was not doing a lot of things that I should be doing, and that I dropped a lot of balls, right? So, and then when this year started, I really had to look around, you know, the things that I was doing, and look around, you know, the lack of consistency that I was having. You know, I think that for me, one of the most important skills that a developer can have is actually be consistent, right? So anything that you do, be writing a blog or create a podcast or, you know, writing code or reading code, whatever it is that you do that you become consistent at, right? That's makes such a difference in your life. And you can really, you know, that's it's like the compound effect, right? It's amazing, right? Now you might think that just a few minutes a day is just too little. It doesn't help you much. But once you compound that day after day after day, it makes a huge difference, a huge result. And so I realized that by the end of last year, I realized that I was dropping the ball, especially in the consistency, right? You know, it was very easy for me when anything happened that I stopped doing what I need to do. And that included a lot of things, right? So, especially in writing and coding and other things that we always need to do. And so this year I made a really big effort to be more consistent and not only for me, but also helping all my students to be more consistent. That was a big focus, for us this year. And so and I think that was very important, right? So it really helped us we had very bad results last year. We were doing very well during the pandemic, but last year was really bad. And then this year we surpassed all of our results from past years. So it really showed that consistency paid off a lot. So, you know, it's not.
But what was the problem? It's like because you were not visible. You didn't got new projects, or what was the issue? Because
So basically, last year was very hard because of health issues, right? So my wife had she had a kidney transplant in the beginning of last year, and she's very fine now, right? But for about 6 months, she had lots and lots of problems, lots of issues, and lots of difficulties. She spent many a lot of time in the hospital. She almost died at the ICU. It was really, really complicated. And then by the middle of last year, she was well, right? She really recovered. She was doing great, and everything sounded good, right? So and then what happened was that I was diagnosed with a kidney cancer, right? And so that's got me into spinning the wheels, and all kinds of, I had to go to, lots of exams and went to surgery, and the first time I'd ever did surgery in my life. And so, and I was really afraid, really worried what's going to happen, and much more afraid than I seem at the time, it looks like. And so, those two things, right, really got me doing other things, right? So it's funny enough that I actually didn't realize how the things that the company needed were not going well, but I did things that I thought was important for the long run, right? So for example, I wrote a book last year because that, I had to start writing a book. I said, I got to finish that book now before I had to go to
surgery.
What's
the title?
It's called The Little Book of Speaking Talents.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it's all about speaking and speaking skills and this kind of things. I completely lost consistency. I didn't do what needs to be done. I didn't realize that the worst of all, I think that's the worst of is not that you lose consistency, when you don't realize, right? That you don't notice how things are. So that's one of the things that we changed this year, is kind of be more attentive to the results of the company, to more attentive to what needs, what really needs to be done. Last year we were just kind of hanging it most of the time, but this year we were more consistent, more specific. So this kind of things, right? I think that all of us, we go through very hard times, right? And many times we're not even able to discuss that with other people, or even tell other people they're going through the problems, right? And so, and not only that, many times there's nothing the other people can do, right? The situation that we're going through, there's very little that friends could do or to help or anything like that. And so all of these, sometimes you get lost, or you get lost in the problems. And I see this all the time, right? Even when we're doing cool things and things that we like, right? I just talked earlier today with a developer, and she, she's amazing. She does all kinds of amazing things. And she was saying that, you know, for my impression that I had about from our conversation, that she got lost on trying to be better, on trying to improve her skills, on trying to be a better developer. And it got to a point that she burned out, right? Or she very nearly burned out. And I see this a lot, you know, a lot of developers, you know, we get lost on this, have to get better and have to improve and have to learn and have to do and have to whatever. And then we forget what's important. And then when you notice we're burned out, we are, you know, upset with our companies or resentful to our friends, resentful to our family. And then we get in this crazy spiral of depression. And so I think that's this. I didn't have any problem with depression. Let me be clear of that. But I see a lot of people going through this. And then what happens is that we lose the sight of what's important, right? And so that's one thing that a good friend of mine, Yolande Pourrier, she always used to say, and you know I have to keep reminding myself. She used to say, you know, check your assumptions, right? She would always say that, check your assumptions. And so you know, so if things are going are going around you and you're not paying attention, we have to have this calm to check, right? To check things around us, check our assumptions, check if we're doing the right things, check if we're having the right results, because sometimes we get lost in this circle, right? And we're not doing what we need to be done. We're not getting the results that we want, and we don't see that we're not doing it, right? We don't see that we're not advancing. We don't see that we're running circles. And so that's why we have to stop and check where we are, check if we're really doing what needs to be done, check the assumptions. That's how you like to put that. And then that's what happened with me last year, right? By the end of the year, you know, I really had to check all of that, right? Because if I had not, I would probably be still today running in circles and having very little results. And it's not only us, right? It's interesting that people.
What do you mean running in circles? Like learning the wrong thing or doing stuff which doesn't matter, or what do you mean by?
I think it's mostly doing the things that not matter, right? It's doing the things. You know, I think that one of the things that I see a lot is that developers, you know, do things just to do it, right? So, for example, I need to learn new technology. I learn just to learn, right? And I need to let me write a blog post. I just write a blog post just to write a blog post, right? So there's no really reason why we're doing this, right? So I'm just going to do, I see Adam Bean does his podcast, so let me do my podcast too, mm-hmm. right? And then there's no reason, we don't understand what's behind, what's the reason that's being done behind it. And then we get very tired thinking that this is the most important thing that I should do, and I spend a lot of time doing it, and you know, especially learning. I think that developers, I like to say that developers has this desire, this love, this addiction to learn new things, right? And so we just learn for learning, and then we don't really understand why we're doing it, and how to benefit from that. And then it gets to a point that you can't learn everything. You can't really do all the things that you want to do. You can't really push yourself in all directions, right? And so because you don't know, you're just kind of, you're moving one step that way or another step this way, right? So that's why I call running circles, right? Yeah. You know, you're not getting anywhere. And so
this is almost, you know, philosophy. Like you should know the why, right? Why I'm doing things.
Funny enough, you know, you can't see this because we're just audio, right? But right behind me, there is a Y on the board. There's the Y. There's
the Y, Holu, OSP, work, and what?
No, it's Y, how, and what, right? There's
how, okay, that's a Holu. Yes. Yeah, sorry, what is Holu? So how, okay.
Mm-hmm. Why, how, and what, right? Those are the three, that's the golden circle of purpose, right? And so, yes, I just did a Y workshop this past Sunday, right? So, So you're right. It's not really philosophy only, right? It's that, you know, everything that you do in your life, you do because you believe in something, right? And so many times when you don't know that, when you don't really connect the dots with the things that are really important for you, then you just keep doing the wrong things, I guess. Or maybe the things, the worst of all, you see one thing, Adam, the worst of all is not that you do the wrong things. It's very, I think it's fairly easy when to realize when we're doing the wrong things. The problem that I see most is that you do the right things, maybe for the wrong reasons, right? Or okay, connect the wrong things. And then it's a lot harder to see that they are not the right things that you should be doing right now, right? You know, mm-hmm. I like to say that, for example, when people procrastinate, right? Lots of time we talk about procrastination, and people think that procrastination is watching TV when you need to be working, right? And that is the easy procrastination, right? If you're watching TV and you need to be working, now, I mean, that's going to be like a big red flag right in front of you, right? But that's not the procrastination that's a problem. The procrastination that's a problem is that you have this big problem to solve. And when you look at it, you say, oh, I need to learn this new tool here to solve the problem. So then you spend a lot of time learning a tool, right? That's not going to solve your problem. And it's still going to give you the feeling that you're doing the right things because you're actually learning, you're studying, you're doing something, right? So that is the worst
procrastination. Bruno,
yeah,
automation is the biggest procrastination, right?
That's true. That's very true.
Because if I have to do something, I see immediately I can automate this. But right, I already know if I start with automation, it will, you know, take twice as long. But I don't have the time. But I do it anyway. But right, you know, it pays off. But it pays off maybe in, you know, weeks. But this is my procrastination, you know. Yeah, and it has nothing to do with the task. But automation is procrastination.
Yeah, you know, so there's good and bad ways for you to deal with procrastination, right? So, for example, in terms of automation, you know, I rarely automate one thing when I need to do one time,
right? Yeah, sure.
You know, so it's only when I see that I'm doing it two, three, you know, it's five times, then I stop to automate, right? And so, but you're right, right? And many times, you know, especially because you're doing automation is an interesting thing because most of the times that you automate some things because that's boring, right? It's very boring for you to do. And so you don't want to do it because it's boring. You know, it takes a lot of time and it's not interesting at all. So then you're going to do something that's interesting that you automate, right? You know, but again, is the whole thing about what is worth, right? What is worthwhile to do and what is not? So that's why thinking about your life's purpose, thinking about your why, it's an important way for you to help you analyze what really matters for you and what doesn't.
Yeah. You said automation for boring stuff, but automation could be also for consistency, you know? If you automate something, you always get the same results. You know, this is also could be a reason, for instance.
Right. I agree. That's, you know.
And now one question regarding the why and how and what. You said this is like golden principles or something? So is it like... Is this your invitation? Invention, sorry. Your invention, or is it...
No. It's not my invention. No, that's a guy called Simon Sinek. Mm-hmm. See, I'm bad for names, right? Simon Sinek is the guy that created this notion of the golden circle. And for a long time, you know, I like Simon Sinek a lot. He talks a lot about leadership and, you know, he's very inspiring. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, I saw this whole discussion about the you know, the why, the how, and the what. He talks a lot about companies, right? And mm-hmm. so, and marketing, and how important this is for marketing for companies. And it took me quite some time to realize how important that is to actually for people, right? So for me, you know, the company wants to have their purpose and thing like this. I think that's awesome. But I don't work with companies, I work with people, right? So once I realized how important this is for people and how powerful it is, that's when I start digging deep into this, right? So this the golden circle that's behind me, it's from Simon Sinek. And I just did a workshop on Sunday with a developer, right? And, you know, he's such an amazing person. And he was completely lost and, you know, in his career, not sure what to do. He kept going back and forth in different things, right? So I said to him, look, come on, let's sit down and let's work out what's really important for you, right? So, you know, how you do things, what's the purpose that you have in your life and all that. And so, and I, once you, when you finish something like this and, you know, and the guy goes out like with spark in his eyes, like, man, now I know, right? Now I understand myself. You know, and he said, man, that's what you're talking about. That's exactly me, but I never saw myself that way, right? And I think that's a very profound, you know, phrase, right? You know, it's, he knows that's exactly him, but he never thought about himself that way. It's and I think that once people realize why they do what they do and how they do what they do, it's so much easier to go focus on the right things. It's so much easier, you know, to choose the right company, to choose the right job, to choose the right technology. And I think that once I understood that, it really helped me. So that's why I do this workshop with all my students, right? I invite them. I do like several times a year. I do the Why workshop just to help people out. Mm-hmm. A few years ago on TDC, we developers conference, we did, you know, maybe 100 Why workshops, right? You know, individual workshops with people to help them think about their lives better. So I think that has been an amazing experience, right? And especially mm-hmm. because when you do a Why workshop 101, right? You know, we do in groups many times, but when you do 101, you have such an opportunity to listen to the other person and understand what's where they are, where they're coming from. And you know, every time I did a Why workshop individually with someone, it's really touching me a lot, and I think that's always an honor to do that to someone.
I ask you about that because I thought about maintainability of software a lot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think with the Why I started, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, but what I ask, you know, why you are doing something in software? It's not in your personal life, in software. If there is no answer, it's not maintainable because mm-hmm. you wrote code and you don't know why. You just wrote to write it. Mm-hmm. But you should ask always why until there is no simpler answer. Mm-hmm. Then it is, you know, simple and maintainable. So this was my way, you know, mm-hmm. approach architectures and design, and it worked well. So I was not aware that there is a principle behind why, how, and what. I just misused, you know, just the why to design software and think about architectures.
Okay, that's interesting. So, you know,
I give you an example, for instance, right? So if you, let's say you have a Java code and there is a factory pattern. So I ask why you wrote the factory. And there should be an answer. You say, okay, because I would like, you know, to have multiple implementations of an interface. So why you would like to have it? I mean, why is not one enough? And then usually developers either become angry because they say, okay, why? Because we have to be modular, whatever. It's okay, but it's not the explanation. What is the benefit, you know, to the client that we have a factory with one interface in one implementation? Mm-hmm. And if there is no answer, delete the factory with the interface and just no keep the implementation. Because if I say, why is the implementation? The answer would be, if there is no implementation, it doesn't work. So this is what the simplest possible answer. So this is what I use, you know, to check whether a system is not even over-engineered, bloated, or just purpose built.
You know, I think that's great. That's kind of combines a lot of things that we talk about so far, right? It combines, you know, the whole idea of the why. It combines the idea of checking your assumptions, right?
So I didn't know about that. So this was interesting. I listened to you. I said, okay, and I just did the why thing, and it worked well, mm-hmm. and people like that because it is way simpler than talking about modularity and all the entities. You know, from back then, you remember the Sun ideas about non-functional requirements and functional requirements. But even you can question, you know, all the non-functional requirements, why it's important. Because in my project, always happen, you know, clients say mission critical 24/7. It's like, why? What happens if you know, the system is 1 hour offline? Mm-hmm. And there should be an answer. If there is no answer, maybe it is not that important, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, and one interesting thing is that, you know, as you said, developers get upset with you and you ask too many whys, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of times the customer gets upset, right? Because
this is inverse. So I'm a little bit more politically correct in customer. And there's a why. I try, you know, to formulate a little bit different.
Right. But the interesting thing is that that's true, right? You know, a lot of times when you ask why and you go deep on the reasons, then you get to a point where, you know, the person actually doesn't know, right? They yeah. don't, they're not even seeing the value of doing all of that. And many times people just want things done because, you know, because it checks some boxes, right? Oh, I want exactly. a clean architecture. I want a fast something. I want a, you know, performance and, you know, modularity and all, you know, check. It's all boxes. And then, but then they don't consider, you know, the cost of doing this. They're going to consider the time of doing this. They don't consider all kinds of other things. You know, if the team is able to do it or not, right? You know, if it goes well with whatever they have in house already. I mean, so all those other things are not considered because, of course, you don't consider those things are good things, right? and so that's when you ask why, then a lot of times people tell you what their priorities are, right? And they mm-hmm. tell you what they really want, and then it's a lot easier for you to get to them what they need.
Yeah, because also interesting what you said, the burnout. So I think a problem could be as well that how would you call it, cognitive load, right? If you have to deal with frameworks all the time and you don't know why, you have to learn lots of things mm-hmm. without, you know, any advantage. So especially interesting, like the front-end frameworks. I mean, what we do a lot in project, we just don't use any frameworks, and then it's simple because, you know, you get to Mozilla web standards and you can just look what's there and you can learn it easily. And the cool story is it remains that way for years. So there is nothing, you know, web standards are web standards. It was like 20 years ago, and it is a little difference, and here we go. The same is with Java, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we get Java 19 and Java 20, but not that I have relearned everything. I just, you know, I can learn incrementally, and mm-hmm. it's still a lot of fun. But if I know, you know, some of my colleagues, they learn a programming language every year something different, I think this will be a little bit stressful because you never become good in something if you just learn, you know, a little mm-hmm. and you forget the other things, and in the end of the day you learn the entire thing, but you know the outcome is not that, you know, great, I would say. So so interesting what you said. So I thought about this, and it maybe, you know, the key to happiness is a little bit minimalism, maybe, right? So Yagni, you aren't gonna need it. Kiss, keep it simple and stupid. And and if it works, I mean, then it works, right?
Right. Yes, and I think that's one of the interesting things about about microservices that allow us to do those kind of things, right? Allow us to use whatever it's to do this small thing, and you know, not having to have this really big thing that just to solve small things, right? So that could be
what define small, because what I see a lot. That with the microservices, people think, you know, small thing is like Unix LS, you know, this is the small thing. Or this was the definition, you know, on right. Of microservices, like the pipeline, the commands. And what I see, hundreds of microservices, and the complexity is huge. And, you know, the advantage is zero. So what I tend to talk about monolith, but my monolith at most, maybe, I don't know, a few hundred classes. So it's not like a huge system, but it is a small app, but it's monolith. Mm-hmm. And this works well. The name is problematic, monolith, but yeah, there's like a tree, right? So a zombie would be better maybe. But yeah, be careful with microservices. I saw a project where no one knew what's going on because there are so many microservices, and they asked me how to debug the thing. I was like, I don't know, you build this, right? I am just a guest here. I can watch, you know, what happens.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think that's one of the things that I like a lot, and even wrote about the Connolly Law the other day, is you know, the whole notion of you know, not fighting against the way your team works, right? You know, lots of people try to do, you know, lots of people try with just one team of 10 people, they want to build 100 microservices, and that's kind of fighting against the way that people work, that people communicate, right? So I do consider, so what you're talking about, you know, having a few small apps, right? They're not really monolith, but they talk to each other. And that's probably you know, way more close to what most companies are, right? Most companies are, you know, just a certain number of developers divided in a small number of teams, right? So then, you know, then you might have a few different services, right? But not necessarily hundreds of microservices, right? I mean, hundreds of microservices could work well for companies companies that have hundreds of developers in lots of
small. But what teams. I really saw of smaller teams, like 10 developers maybe, and they built 100 services or 50 or whatever, and this was, and hey, exactly what you said, right? The why, there was no why. They say, okay, mm-hmm. Now it's time to build microservices because we're in the year 2019 or 18, and this was the year of microservices, and they build them without thinking why. And this was crazy because, as you know, if you have many, you know, microservices, you have coordinate them, you have, you know, patch them, release them, and everything has to be still consistent. So it's challenging.
There's lots of companies that cannot even deliver the one monolith, right, consistently.
But it's getting better. It's not the impression that the software quality is getting better, or is at least more reasonable. It's not like, you know, we drawing UML 2 years and then generate code and hope that it works. It is more reasonable somehow, right?
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good point. And I think that there's some reasons for that, right? I think that some of the things that really make software better are more usage, right? You know, things like, might be funny, but things like, Git, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, code repositories, right? That's, you know, just a few years ago, the amount of companies that did not have a code repository was so huge. It's amazing, right? Or things like, you know, CI and CD, not even CD, but CI, right? Compiling the code, right? Frequently, you know, I've participated in my lifetime. I participated in both in projects. There's no, no code repository at all, right? You know, I even remember one project that they had this code repository. It wasn't the mainframe. So the way they work it was, they would FTP the code to the mainframe, and that's the mainframe would do a snapshot of the code. And so they would do this one time at the beginning of the project, and then, okay, that check a box, right? And so now we can just work in whatever we want, and then once the project is finished, we can just do this again, right? So now, it's not too many years ago.
But this was almost Git, distributed repository was almost FTP still, but you know, this was almost like, you know, it's not Subversion, more like Git. It was highly distributed, right? Never had a merge conflict. This was the amazing thing, right?
Right. Yes.
No branches. This was monorepo actually.
Yes. You know, that's crazy, right? So that's things like this, right? Things like, you know, I'm also working on projects where, for you to compile the project, right? The guys that compile the project and build the jar file, right? They would take 2 weeks to build the jar file, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Golden jar pattern is this.
Yes, exactly, right? and so because it took 2 weeks for you to be able to compile the software and put it to run, the developers didn't even care what they're doing, right? They just kind of code whatever and just drop it because they didn't even know if you compile or not, right? So, you know, so I'm just talking about this. This sounds so crazy, but those things were just a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that today, things like code repositories and you know, continuous integration and even library repositories, right? Those things are so more common. There's so many more people using them that there's no other way than the code gets better, right? Because now you can see, you know, the turnaround between you writing the code and you're seeing the code running. It's much smaller, and people can actually do something about it, right? So I agree with you. I think that's, you know, from the project that I see today, the amount of projects that have those basic problems have fallen dramatically, right? It's nothing compared to how it was just a few years ago. And because of that, I think that projects, you know, are much better, no doubt.
How software changed in Brazil pre-pandemic and now? I don't know whether we can call it post-pandemic, but somehow in, you know, how we call it? In in middle of pandemic model late pandemic, let's say.
Right. Well, you know, since a pandemic, something that only starts, right? And mm-hmm. right. So once a disease is in a pandemic mode, it's always in a pandemic mode, right?
Yeah.
Just so I think that we're never going to have the post pandemic, I guess. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I think that what I saw is that, first of all, I like this. I was watching this this guy Silvio Meira talking about it right in the beginning of the pandemic, and I think he's so right that, you know, once the pandemic hits, companies move it to the future, right? Very fast. What does he mean by that? That's, you know, I've been working remotely since 1998, fully remote since 1998, right? So mm-hmm. for me, when the pandemic started and people start working remotely, I mean, they were 20 years behind, mm-hmm. right? So, and basically they were 20 years behind, not because technology did not allow it, just because they wanted to, right?
Yes.
So mm-hmm. in just a month, companies that were 20 years behind, they became, you know, they jumped forward 20 years, right? Like this,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so at that moment, they, you know, they had to have, you know, not only remote capabilities to work, right? But they had to have repositories that were remote. They had to have, you know, continuous integration systems that would compile things remotely. They had to allow people to deploy in production remotely. I mean, they had all those things, right? Mm-hmm. All of that infrastructure that we have been talking about for years and years and years. We have been mentioning how important they are. We have been saying how much more quality your code is going to be. We have been saying how much better your developer is going to work on. All those things that were not in place just because there's someone that didn't think that they were important. Suddenly, all those things became extremely important. And then people move it to those environments like this. And so now there's no coming back, right? You know, people are not going to go back to develop software the way they developed before, right? And
because, and, you know, but I think the reason why there's no coming back, because developers proved that they can be productive remotely, right? So there are no arguments for management. So there are actually no arguments left, because it worked well. Some companies mm-hmm. were even more productive than before. And now mm-hmm. it's developer choice whether they work remotely or not. And there is actually no arguments left for management. So there are no arguments.
Right. And basically the way management did this in the past was, you know, there's no way for you to do it, right? Because if you go remote, you can't access the things. You can't access the meetings. You can't participate on things, right? You are disconnected, right?
Yeah.
You know, the reason I was able to work remotely in 1998 is because I was working for Sun, and Sun had a worldwide infrastructure, mm-hmm. right? That allow us to call in to any meeting anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so I could just be in a payphone anywhere in the world and just pick the payphone and call into a meeting, right? So I had the tools that allow me to do that. And so management could just say, you see, you work remotely, but you can't do things, right? Now they cannot say that anymore, right? There's no excuses. Like, as you said, there's no excuses. And the other thing that I think it happened is that, you know, is that developers now they see the value of those tools, right? Mm-hmm. Not only management see the value, but the developers see the value of those tools, right? Because you know, now those tools allow them more freedom, more autonomy, you know, more time with their families a lot of times, right? So even people that like to work at the office, you know, they actually see the value of those, right? So mm-hmm. I don't think there is any coming back to a previous situation, and because there's no coming back, you know, I think all those tools are just gonna, you know, keep forcing us to do more high quality software.
Interesting. In the year 2000, I think there was a new Sun Microsystems site built in the near of Munich, and mm-hmm. Called in Heimstetten. And the interesting part is I was there because I was a freelance trainer from time to time. And I saw that you are absolutely right. So it was not even set up, you know, that you have your fixed place. Mm-hmm. You came, you had like the Java card, you put, you know, into the terminal. So you got the screen loader, so you could pick whatever seat you had, you know, whatever room you did. It was your choice. And you could start working. So it was in the year 2000. It was amazing back then.
Right.
I think they had the Sun Rays, I think you remember. You know, the thin Java stations, and they worked, you know. For me, it was amazing. So, okay, it's interesting. It's actually working.
Yeah. The sun rays are a nice concept. You know, that's. I think that a lot of places this too work, right? You know, not the sun rays anymore, but I think there are other.
Yeah, sure. The concept. I mean, the GitHub code space or whatever. This is a very similar concept, right?
Right. Yeah. So. You know, not that we don't have
another question, but because now I have an CTO or CEO or owner even of a huge Brazilian company. So Bruno, is it more the Brazilian companies are going to the cloud or going out of the cloud? What's you know, the direction now?
Well, the impression that I have is that more people go into the cloud. I don't think there is you know, the cloud providers. There's several cloud providers that have data centers in Brazil. Really catering to the
repatriation. So every still going to the public clouds.
Yes, I think there's lots of the public clouds, but you know, but a lot of the public clouds are in Brazil, right? So
yeah.
You know, I think that's all the big cloud providers have data centers in Brazil. You know, one big change that they start receiving, you can even pay in local currency, for example, for most of them. You know, so I think that there's a much larger infrastructure of service providers that will help you, you know, get your things in the cloud. I don't think everyone is actually having all the benefits of the cloud, right? Lots of people are still buying like big machines just to run whatever, right?
This was my second question, actually. This is telepathy. So I had actually two questions. What is the most popular cloud in Brazil?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure about the market, but I still think that's Amazon, right? So AWS is probably the most.
And Azure is coming? I think so, right?
Yeah, Azure is very big. Azure is big in Brazil. Oracle is big in Brazil.
Oh, cool.
Yes, you know, Jelask has a big partner in Brazil, also, right? So yeah, there's some very large cloud providers here. They have data centers here. Some of them have more than one data center, and I think that's an interesting thing, right? You know, Brazil infrastructure is a big difference between, you know, between the south and southeast of Brazil and the northeast of Brazil. So I think there's cloud. They even cloud provide to have data centers in both places. So yeah, I think there is a big move. There's even lots of government entities running things in the cloud now. So.
Mm-hmm. And this was the question what they already started in order to answer is. Is this like they're buying big EC2 machines or and just, you know, moving the virtualization workloads to the cloud, or are they smarter and, you know, trying to refactor or re-architect the applications?
I think it depends on the company. I've seen both cases. I've seen companies that are kind of buying big machines and you know, just kind of running the cloud like they were just virtualization things like they're doing in place, right? But also there are lots of companies that are doing the right thing and doing things in the cloud and even some very smart things, right? You know, you know our friends Fabiani and Fernando, right? And
what she's doing, huh?
Yes. So they were running their company was acquired, right? You know, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, maybe, or a year and a half ago or something. But you know, they're doing. They have this very, very large, amazing large workloads, and they're running in the cloud in a very, very smart way, right? So they benefit from whatever they can in terms of you know, starting machines and let the machines die and just kind of recover. I mean, they're using all kinds of tricks to really use the cloud well. So I'm just saying that there are,
and hopefully Java, right? Fabian has to run Java still.
Oh yes, Fabian does everything in Java. Yes.
Yeah, then they should ping her. So.
Yes. Perfect. Oh, yes. You should, right? You should ping her. You know, she's totally amazing, right? So she's doing so many amazing things. So
yeah. And you mentioned several times students. Your students. Are you a professor, or how you get the students?
So I mentor developers, right? There's a lot of things that I, you know, we start talking about career in the beginning, right? So
yeah.
That's the thing that I do most today is I mentor developers. I work with professional developers, people that have several years of experience, right? You know, 8, 10, 15, 20, 30 years of experience, right? And basically what I help them is I help them figure out what they need to do, what their own path they want to follow, and then work with them to actually get the results they want, right? So that's
the coach.
I call mentor, right? You know, there's a difference between there is instructor or professor, like you said. There is the coach and there's the mentor, right? So I think that those are three slightly different things, right? The teacher, the instructor is the one that teaches something. Doesn't matter what situation you are, the teacher teaches something. The coach, the other way around, the coach doesn't teach you anything, right? The coach helps you think by yourself and mm-hmm. make your own decisions and you know. And then the mentor is someone that have done similar things that you want to achieve. And then he both helps you think and move your own direction, but also teaches you some of the things that you need to do to get there, right? So,
but still, how the listeners of AHXFM podcast can become your students? Is it a possibility, or I mean,
it is possible. Well, I think, you know, before anyone even wants to get my student, right? I think that I do have a book that you know, I have this process that I use to think of my career, right? And people asking me, so you know, how do you think about your career? How do you plan your next step, right? So, and I have this process that I learned it from different people. And so I put all this together in a book that's called The Best Developer Year, right? So it's a good moment right now to be talking about this, right? So I know I can put the link there in the description, yeah, sure. right? So basically what we have, you know, I wrote this book. It's a very small book. It's about just a few pages, but it has all the questions that I ask myself to realize where I am, you know, to test my assumptions, like Yolanda used to say, right? And then plan what are the things that I'm gonna do next, right? So, you know, I give this book away for free for everyone that's listening here, right? So then you can start thinking about your own career. And so if what you want to do, right, is something that you need help with, ping me and we can discuss, right? You know, how to do that. But basically, you know, that's what I do right now, right? I do help people, and I do have a mailing list, right, where I send daily emails for people to really think about their careers. Actually, today I wrote an email about ChatGPT, for example, right?
Okay,
lots of people asking me, you know, is ChatGPT going to replace developers, this kind of things, right? So I actually got ChatGPT to answer that question himself, right? Or itself, maybe, right? So if you guys are interested in working with someone to move your career forward, right? Yeah, by all means, reach out.
All right, cool. Bruno, I will invite you next year. See how many, you know, trees you planted and how many survives and how this zombie is doing. So it is already a curious case, the zombie, whether or not there should be a difference. You should do a picture now and then next year, and we should now spot the difference, whether the zombie is actually growing or shrinking. So this is the most interesting, you know, fact for next year.
Right. Yeah, I'm gonna do that. So I'll take a picture of the once we get all the trees up today, and you know, not today, but this week when we get all the trees up and decorated, I'll take a picture and send to you. So at least you know.
And Twitter, so I can retweet it. It
would be cool. I can tweet that. Yes.
I wish you Merry Christmas and Happy New 2023, and you and family all the best. And I hope, you know, the next year is going to be way better for you.
Well, yeah, this year has been awesome, man. You know, last year was the one complicated. This year has been awesome. Yes. So just clarify, you know, although I had a little bit of a problem in the beginning of the year, but we can talk about this another time. So, but yes, man, thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure to be here with you. It's always an honor to be invited in this conversation. And, you know, that you have a blessed Christmas. Everyone listen to us, you know, have an awesome Christmas. And that 2023 be the year of your career, everyone else's careers. And I'm going to leave here an invitation, right? So you're talking about the why, how important the why for this. If you ever want to do this, you know, I'd like to extend the invitation for you to do a why workshop with me. We do a one-on-one workshop. It takes a little bit of time, a little bit more than recording a podcast. But if you're willing to spare that, maybe can help you focus even more your work, right? So
even more my work. So yeah,
do what?
Focus even more on our work.
Yes, no, I'm talking to you, Adam, right?
So about my work is even worse.
Yeah, so if you want to do a wire workshop with me, let me know and we can schedule.
But then you get a coding workshop from me. This is worse than why. I will force you to code Java again. This Bruno.
That's okay. That's good, yeah. Man. That's awesome, right? You know, I'm sure I do code Java, so that's not going to be a problem at all.
I will find something, you know, where not. I will ask, you know, your colleagues, where is, you know, weak spot, and then we'll do this. Perfect.
Yeah, there's a running joke since many years ago that people say Bruno cannot know Java because he doesn't even know HTML. So that's my weak spot.
Okay, then we do a HTML and CSS power workshop. Very good.
Yeah. Okay, good.
To all listeners, Merry Christmas, Happy New 2023, and see you next year.
Yeah, thanks everyone.